This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you once again from my home studio. My producer, Lee Delapina, is in our primary studio in the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky. As always, you are listening to Trainer Talk throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM Channel 201, or you are tuned in to our free live streaming or the archived podcast of this program, and you're doing that through our HRRN website, horseracingradio.net. Really excited for this one-hour program here this afternoon. This afternoon's guest, first joined us on this program, believe it or not, October 24th of 2012. Now, a couple of his career highlights, and there have been many, but a couple of them include this classic victory in the 2006 Test of the Champion.
It's now Bluegrass Cat and Jazzle, and they will arrive at the top of the stretch together. And Steppenwolf gets his motor running. He's coming on through third in between horses. Sun River's right alongside him at the top of the stretch. It's Jazzle in front. Jazzle's come from way out of it, and he's coming down to the last furlong with the lead. Bluegrass Cat is fighting him hard all the way. Sun River is third. Steppenwolf is fourth. It's still Jazzle and a very determined Bluegrass Cat. He is determined but second to the Belmont winner, Jazzle. Jazzle won it by a length. Bluegrass Cat was second. Sun River was third. Steppenwolf was fourth. The final time was 2 minutes 27 and 4/5 seconds.
Tom Durkin with the call of the Belmont Stakes. That victory would be followed later the same year by one of our guests' all-time favorite horses, capping off a Horse of the Year campaign with this gutsy effort on racing's biggest stage.
And Bernardini strikes the front in the Classic. Brother Derek running a huge one to his inside. In behind those two now, Invasor's coming home. Gainley as well down the center. Bernardini, Invasor's coming with a good run down the center of the track. Brother Derek tries to battle back along the inside, but Invasor, Bernardini, Invasor, Invasor and Bernardini in a thriller, but Invasor's got his measure. And Invasor, the Argentinian bred, Uruguayan raced, Invasor has won the Classic. Second was Bernardini. Premium Tap running on third. Giacomo came from dead last to finish fourth, just ahead of Brother Derek.
In total, he has saddled 1,577 career winners. His runners have earned more than, get this, $120 million in purses, which means he's been winning a lot of the right races, too. All of that tremendous success made his announcement on March 4th even more difficult for many of us to comprehend. The 59-year-old native of Lexington, Kentucky, announced he would retire from training to become a jocks agent for talented Luis Saez. And if you haven't figured it out yet, I'm talking about trainer Kieran McLaughlin. Please join me in welcoming him to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here this afternoon. Kieran, welcome, my friend.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I know that I could have gone on and on and on and spent much of this hour playing race clips of so many of the great horses you've trained, but those two moments there, Kieran, boy, what a ride this has been for you.
Yeah, it's been a great ride. And, you know, first of all, during these crazy coronavirus times, I'd just like to say, you know, my thoughts and prayers with so many people that are affected by this crazy, you know, virus. And so many people are affected in one way or another. And I'm happy to be home with my wife in quarantine, basically. Not quarantine, but shut down in the house and able to work on the phone as a jocks agent. But those great calls of horses, some of my favorite horses for sure. And it's been a great career. It was a tough decision to hang up my training career, but it's really a great opportunity to work for a very talented jockey in Luis Saez going forward.
Yeah, over the past 3 years, Kieran, you've won 19 graded stakes races, so it's not like your operation had tailed off in any way. You were still going strong. Why walk away now?
Well, it was an opportunity with Luis Saez. Two, there were just a lot of issues with the business now, you know, with the expenses of running a business at a top level and trying to do things, everything right, was very expensive and difficult, and it just kind of was a perfect storm for me when Luis Saez became available. I was a jock's agent way back in 1992 and 1993 for Chris Antley, so I know what it's about and how to do it, and I just thought it was a great opportunity because of the issues with the expense of running a big outfit.
Yeah, and in Luis Saez, you get a veteran rider who has won more than 2,400 races in his career. He's won a slew of graded stakes victories. That had to help make your decision to leave training just a little bit easier, didn't it?
Yes, for sure. That's why I say I think it's one of the best jobs in American racing. A lot of people around the world might not understand that, but it is a very, very good job in American racing, especially, you know, for me to have an experience doing it before. But just to answer the phone and try and pick the right horse, it's a great opportunity. It's not like I'm trying to take a young jockey that people don't know. He's a top rider and one of the best in the country, and it's nice to be able to just pick the right horse, hopefully.
You know, Kieran, you don't just walk away from something like the career that you had training horses without a lot of thought and consideration and talking to your family. I know that there had to be parts of that decision that were agonizing for you. So I guess my question is, what was the most difficult part, or what has been the most difficult part of giving up training?
Well, it's probably the relationships that I've developed over the years with owners and people, and hopefully those relationships can keep going. Obviously, I can text to owners or talk to racing managers. But the help, you know, I had help with me forever. I go back to Art Magnuson, was with me 22 years. When I first went to Dubai, I had my sister-in-law, Lisa Walker, started, and Neil and Trish were with me from the very beginning, my brother Neil McLaughlin and his wife Trish. And some of the exercise riders and grooms and foremen were with me for 20 years. And that was very difficult. But luckily, Neil and Trish were with me at this time. Artie had already left a few years ago. But all the help and relationships with people and the competitiveness of trying to win the big races, it was always great to try and pick the right spots for the horses, try and get the right jockeys, and it's a competitiveness too, but I haven't lost that in having a jockey now trying to win races, so that's fun.
How do you hope that people remember Kieran McLaughlin, the trainer?
That's a good question. I mean, I would say that I worked every day, you know, I was out every day working, and I treated everybody properly, whether it was a hot walker. That's what's so neat about our business. When you think some mornings at Saratoga, I literally was standing next to billionaires or speaking to them on the phone and working with hot walkers and grooms. And it just is, in nowhere in the world do you have that probably ratio, or I don't know exactly the wording of status of people, but it's neat to think that, you know, I dealt with all of them well and got along with everybody very well, and that's what is neat about our business. And hopefully people, you know, I never mistreated anybody. That's what makes me so mad that the governor put that Chad Brown and I and Linda Rice were stealing people's money, basically, and that's the furthest thing from the truth. And that had a lot to do with my decision making. I'm still waiting for a federal fine on H-2B visas, because I always try to do things right, but the lawyer made a few mistakes, and I don't know what it's going to cost me still. But I never mistreated anybody or did anything wrong at all, and took care of all my people very well. When you think about $120 million, I would have staked the grooms and exercise riders $12 million of those dollars, a million two of those dollars over the years. And that's why they stayed with me forever, 1%. The grooms got 1%, the exercise riders got. So I always treated everybody very well.
Talking with trainer Kieran McLaughlin here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. As you heard me reference, it was early March when he announced that he would give up training to be jock's agent for Luis Saez. And we'll talk about what he's doing now. We'll talk about the role of a jock's agent, and we'll get his thoughts on if it's something that's maybe even a little bit different now than it was back when he was working with Chris Antley years and years ago. But Kieran, you talk about that situation in New York that played out, and you said you're still waiting on some things to come down and maybe some more fines or whatever it may be. Has training racehorses, the profession of training racehorses, become almost, I guess I'll use the word, impossible to run a business and to make money with?
Yeah, it's not impossible, no, but it's very difficult. The one other thing that I didn't have much access to that some other big trainers do have are breeding rights and commissions, buying and selling horses. I never really bought many horses or sold many horses, and the stallions, I didn't have breeding rights to many stallions. I did have some, but not that many. So that helps with your income to cover some of the losses that you might have in everyday expenses. But it is hard to make it work, and it's hard to raise your day rate every year or ever at all. I feel bad for some of the trainers that are trying to do it for $100 or $110 a day, because it's just so expensive with the health. All the laws are going up. The minimum wage is going up in New York. The salaried wages is going up. It is very, very difficult. I don't want to use the word impossible, but it is very, very difficult.
What would you tell a young trainer that comes to you looking to get started in the game today?
Well, I have several friends that are young, and it's a passion like I had, and I hate to see them not carry on and do it. It's just difficult to do, and you must win races, because that's what the 10% helps, again, you know, fill in the gaps of losing money here or there to pay the feed man. So I don't want to discourage anybody. The horse racing business has been very, very good to me and my family. So I'm happy that there's young guys that want to try to make it go and train horses. It's important. And like Chad Brown's not old by any means, and he does very well, Todd Fletcher and others. But it's not easy like I think it was easier back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000. It's not so easy anymore with all the regulations.
If you could go back, Kieran, and do this whole thing over again, would there be anything in particular that you would do differently or maybe change a little bit looking back on things?
No, that's one thing I say. I'm so lucky to have gone to Dubai in November 1993. That was a very difficult, tough decision. Not, you know, difficult. My wife was pregnant with our son, and Aaron was 2.5 years old. So when I got on a plane to go halfway across the world, and, you know, back then I didn't know exactly what I was getting into. It was a great decision, and it was fabulous that it all worked out. I would not change anything. It was great to see all parts of the world. Both of my children were able to see, you know, we stopped in Switzerland on the way back, or France, or Amsterdam, England. And it was great exposure to be an experience to see the world. And we, the Maktoum family, no one better to work for in the world than the Maktoum family. And Shadwell and Godolphin both. They have thousands of employees, thousands of horses all over the world, and they're great to work for. And I was just one of the lucky ones and my wife and kids to experience that. We lived there 10 years and came back in 2003, and I was able to keep training for them until, you know, last week.
You know, to have somebody like Letty by your side, and of course she comes from a racing background too, but to have her by your side when you're trying to make a difficult decision like that with a very young family, that had to mean an awful lot, and that had to help a lot too, didn't it?
Yeah, she's been so supportive throughout. I was, you know, to think back when we first started on the racetrack and got married in 1983, and we had a pickup truck and a travel trailer and went from Miami to Los Angeles in it, Louisville, Chicago, and the moves around a lot to New Jersey with Wayne, to New York. We left the travel trailer in California in 1986 and then moved into, a house or apartments. But I was, it was not easy moving and packing all the time, and she was always great and behind me 100%, and that helped a lot. And then having children, they've always been there and supportive. Erin loves our business, and she's in our business at the Breeders' Cup. Ryan, luckily, is in the finance world, and he's a very bright kid and works for Merrill Lynch. But he, too, loves our business.
Yeah, Erin, your daughter, was born when you were still working for Wayne Lucas, if I'm not mistaken. And isn't there a story there about leaving Todd Pletcher in charge of the operation when you were gone when she was born?
Yeah, that was a good story. Lottie's such a good racetrack wife that she had Erin on a Tuesday morning, a dark day, at 4:33 a.m., and I was with her all night through the night. And when Erin was born, I called the barn. It was before cell phones, and Todd Pletcher answered the phone, and he was my foreman. And I was the assistant in New York under Wayne. And I said, we had a baby girl, all is well. And he said, great. And I said, you take care of things this morning. I've been up all night. I'm not coming in. And he said, what do you want me to do with them? I said, whatever you do is the correct thing. Train the horses. I don't know. I'll see you later. So I think I left the horses in good hands with Todd Pletcher.
Yeah, that relationship between you and Todd and your family and the Pletchers has been a relationship that is as strong today as it's ever been. Tell me a little bit about that relationship, Kieran, and why it is so special.
Yeah, it's great because Todd and I, he worked with me for 3 years. I hate to use the word under me, but he worked with me for 3 years. And his wife, Tracy, and my wife are very close friends. And we've remained close friends. Even when I was in Dubai, I would talk to him, and we luckily came back every summer. And we both live in Garden City, and so we're very close. And the children, our children, a little bit older than his, but they are like brother and sister or cousins. They're very close, and it's a great relationship. And now I have to lean on him a little bit to put Louis Saez on some of those fast horses he trains.
Yeah, how does that conversation go when you call him?
He's very organized, and he's great to do business with as a jocks agent. When the new book comes out, I will call him first and say, or text him, but usually call him and say, let's go over the book. And then he'll give me calls throughout the book, and then we'll have some question marks, and he said, we'll go back over it again. And then we'll go over it again and again, but mostly he's pointing for the races, and I don't ask him the horses' names because he's the best to ride for. And sometimes I might have to not ride for him and ride for someone else, but not very often because he does so well.
When you and Todd were both working with Wayne, and Wayne has a reputation now because he's turned out so many great trainers that were assistants or foremans for him when he was really had things rolling back in the day. But when you and Todd were there together, did you have a sense, Kieran, that he could be this caliber of horse trainer?
Yes, I did. I mean, his father, J.J. Pletcher, was a great trainer. When I was a kid in Hot Springs in the early 80s and late 70s, Todd's father was a very good trainer and well-respected, a great person. And so Todd had a great avenue to do well, or was always going to do well. But he worked so hard, and he's very similar to Wayne. He's a perfectionist, and he just, there was no question he was going to do great, and it has come to, you know, fruition with him doing so well. You knew he was always going to do great.
Why have so many trainers today had so much success after going through the Wayne Lucas program?
It's a good question. I mean, Wayne was always a school teacher and a coach, and he's been a great teacher and a coach for all of us. But if you weren't able to get up at 4 a.m. and show up to work every day and be on your game, you weren't going to make it with Wayne. So anybody that worked for Wayne over a period of time was going to be successful one way or the other, but all of us were assistant trainers wanting to be trainers. So he was a great coach and a great teacher for all of us.
How many years were you with Wayne, Kieran?
7 years, and I like to say, when I was 19 years old, 18, 19, or 20, I took my trainer's test in Lexington, Kentucky, under Keene Dangerfield, a famous old steward in Kentucky racing. That was a pretty tough steward. And I took my trainer's test, and I passed it. And he called me into his office one-on-one after I took the four-hour exam. Many of us took it. And he said, "What are you going to do with this trainer's license?" And I said, "Well, sir, I have a good friend, Alvin Haynes. He's going to give me a couple horses. I'm going to go to Latonia back then, or Turfway, or the Kentucky Training Center and train." And he said, "I highly recommend you don't do that." He said, "I recommend you go to work for the biggest outfit you can go to work for, because otherwise you're going to train two or three claiming horses, and you're going to charge $2 or $3 or $5 less than the guy in the next barn trying to get more horses, and you're always going to be a claiming trainer. Go to work for the biggest outfit you can go to work for and meet the right people at the right time, and the sky's the limit." And that was in like 1979 or 1980, and wow, it was a great advice. And I got lucky to get with Wayne after Mark Cassidy, Dave Casson, my father-in-law John Hennig, and a couple of other people, but that was a great advice.
How were you put in touch with Wayne and reach out to him initially to say, "Hey, can I have a job?"
That's another good question. I was working for Tim Muckler at Arlington Park in 1984, and Wayne brought a filly in, Life's Magic and Tiltillating. He brought two fillies at different times. And he asked the racing office or the racing secretary, "Where the best barn? I want to be in a nice barn." And Tim Muckler's barn was beautiful, landscaped, had a speaker phone in the barn. We had a speaker PA system in the barn. And everything was beautiful, the flowers and all, Wayne's way. And he asked to go in that barn. So I was the assistant there, and I met him on race day or the day before the race, and visited with him that day and told him that if ever anything opened up, I started out as a hot walker, I'd love to go to work for him. And so we stayed in touch, and he came in there twice, like in July and September, and then I stayed in touch on the phone with him, and he finally asked me to come to Santa Anita January 1985. I started February 1985, and we drove from Miami all the way to California, Letty and I, and started there, and so it worked out great.
What do you remember about walking into his barn at Santa Anita for the first time?
Well, the funny thing was, he told me to meet him at the donut shop at 4 a.m., and it was close to Santa Anita, and I was thinking, what the hell? I never worked for anybody that started at 4 a.m. I said, "It's so dark. I wonder what you do." So I didn't want to be late, and I was excited to get there, and I had a 20-minute drive, and I got to the donut shop at 3:45, and he was there, cup of coffee, probably a donut, and I went with him to the track. I followed him up to the track. and we started at 4 a.m. at Santa Anita, and he would do the set list at 4 a.m., you know, check on the horses and the weather and make sure the track was fast and okay, and then he would do the set list that morning between 4 and 5:30 when the track opened, and he would make the phone calls. A couple people from back east would call him, too, because it's 3 hours difference. But I remember starting, and I was so excited to be around such good horses. And Wayne, too, he was like, you know, a hero to me. I was lucky that when I was 12 years old, I wrote a paper. I wanted to be a horse trainer like Charlie Whittingham, because Charlie Whittingham was a big name then in 1972, 73. So I was living my dream being there, and I was a little bit nervous. I didn't want to do anything wrong, and I wanted to make sure I got up and got there on time. And I was late one morning. The electricity went off. My alarm didn't go off, and I got there like 30 minutes late, but it was an hour late for me because I was always there at 4:30, and I didn't get there till 5:30 that morning. And he just looked down at me from the pony, and he didn't have to say much. And I said, "I'm so sorry. My electricity went off. It'll never happen again." And I went and bought two wind-up alarm clocks and an electric time clock. So I had three alarm clocks to make sure I got up. We didn't have the phones back then to set an alarm. So those were some of the early memories.
Visiting with trainer Kieran McLaughlin here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. We're going to continue this visit in the second half of the program. I will do that when we come back. So much more to talk about, including what he's doing now, the jocks agent for Luis Saez. We'll get to that in the second half. Stay with me. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, and it's right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, Fasig's family, basically. Some of the guys that work here I've known for 30 years. I just felt really supported, and they're great communicators. They try to help in whatever you do.
Fasig Tipton has a sale for every market, every segment in the industry. There's multiple opportunities where you're going to have plenty of good buying and selling situations.
Great customer service. I'm not only a buyer with them, but I'm a seller, and I've always been well taken care of.
There's a lot of different things that sometimes you need at a sale, and Fasig Tipton is there every step of the way.
They show year after year that they're ethical and they're fair, and they enjoy what they do. But when you're around people that have a combination of all those things, you know, you can't lose.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the FIPS in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Time-tested Broken Vow continues to deliver quality black-type stakes horses at a 15% clip. The top son of Unbridled has sired over 150 black-type horses, 80 black-type winners, and over $75 million in earnings. Among the 12 black-type horses sired by Broken Vow in 2019 was dual Canadian Classic winner Tone Broke, winner of classic races on dirt and turf. Also the sire of Imprimis, the Speedy Keeneland graded stakes winner of over $440,000. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
As they wind around the turn to the top of the stretch in Derby number 131, it's High Fly, Bellamy Road attacking second. Buzzard's Bay is on the far outside. They straighten away in the stretch drive, and here comes a Fleet Alex through between horses. A Fleet Alex in on the far outside, taking the lead now into deep stretch. Taking the lead, a Fleet Alex on the outside. And here comes Closing Argument. A Fleet Alex, far outside, a late run from Giacomo. Giacomo surging, a Fleet Alex, Closing Argument. Giacomo in the final stride to win Derby 131.
The late Luke Kreitbosch with the call of the Kentucky Derby. Giacomo just edging out closing argument. A half-length victory for Giacomo. Closing argument, of course, trained by our guest tonight, Kieran McLaughlin. He's probably not happy with me that I chose that clip to come back from the commercial break, but I'm going to ask him about that moment when he was so close to achieving what would have been no doubt a lifelong dream, and to have it snatched away like that had to be a little bit difficult. So we'll talk about that momentarily, but do want to welcome everybody back to Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. If you missed any portion of this program or any of our Trainer Talk shows, they're all archived for you on our website at horseracingradio.net. So head over there and check them out and listen at your leisure. That's horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Well, Kieran, that call right there, that moment when closing argument had the lead in the stretch, you thought for at some point you're going to win your first Kentucky Derby. That had to be just devastating to have him finish second that day.
Yeah, it was devastating because I thought we had it won. Usually the horse on the lead at the eighth pole wins. I was, thought we had it, but, we were 73-1, so I was also happy to be second. You know, the thing that hurt my feelings was the rabbit for Coolmore, I think, was 60-1, and we were 73-1. We were trying to win the race, and they weren't even trying to win the race. But it was a great effort, and I thought we might get there sometime, but we didn't ever get there. But it was a great memory to be second.
That is one of the races that you were never able to add to your resume. And I know, obviously, being a native of Kentucky, that would have meant a lot, but it means a lot to every trainer that's involved in this sport. Why is the Kentucky Derby so difficult to win?
It's so difficult because only 20 horses are, qualify every year. And out of 20,000 plus up to 30,000 foals every year, now it's less, but and to get there on the day and trying to win the race with, one of 20 horses, you have a mile and a quarter, tough. Some of them are just turned 3 years old. Some of them aren't three yet, but it's a mile and a quarter. They haven't been a mile and a quarter. It's the crowd. It's the trip you have. How lucky you have to get to have a smooth trip. It's a very, very difficult race to win, and that's what makes it so special when people do win it.
If that Kentucky Derby with closing argument was one of the more gut-wrenching moments in your career, tell me about a couple of the moments that are always going to stand out to you as being the most memorable.
Being the best moments?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Invasor winning the Breeders' Cup Classic was great, but the number one moment forever for me is Invasor winning the World Cup in Dubai, because of our relationship with the Maktoum family and Sheikh Hamdan, especially His Highness Sheikh Hamdan bin Rashid Al Maktoum, who owns Shadwell. He's been almost a fatherly figure to me since I went to Dubai in 93, and he's a special man and a great man besides being a great owner. And to go back there to be with him on the night to win his race in Dubai, it doesn't get any better than that. Even winning the Kentucky Derby might not have been better than that. So that was definitely the highlight of my career, and I was hoping I could one day say I had a better horse than him, but it didn't quite happen. Frosted would have been the second probably best horse, and the most impressive performance ever was his Met Mile win for sure. And we had a few other big wins by different horses, but those were the two probably best horses I ever trained.
Quite often we hear, not just yourself, Kieran, but people in our sport, we talk about Sheikh Hamdan, we talk about Sheikh Mohammed, and we say these names, and they're just prominent people to many of us, but you had the chance to really be close with them, and you described Sheikh Hamdan as being somewhat of a father figure for you. So for people that aren't familiar with Sheikh Hamdan, who is he? Who is Sheikh Hamdan in that family?
He's the oldest brother now. He's 2 years older than Sheikh Mohammed, but he's a little more low-key, and he's the finance minister of the UAE, and he's maybe deputy ruler, but Sheikh Mohammed was more visible and wanted to take the – ruler, as he's the ruler of Dubai. Sheikh Hamdan is just a little more low-key and just a really pleasant, great person, and he didn't really want all the limelight, and yet they're very close. So it's Sheikh Hamdan bin Rashid, and the bin means son of. So there was four brothers that were the son of Rashid, who was the ruler before them, and their father, Sheikh Maktoum bin Rashid, passed away in 96, I think, or 2006, but he was Gainsborough Farm. And then next brother was Sheikh Hamdan, and he's Shadwell. And then Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum is Godolphin, Darley, and the ruler of Dubai. And then the fourth brother is Hamed, A-H-M-E-D. He runs under Jebel Ali. He owns Jebel Ali in Dubai, the racetrack. And he's the fourth brother, the youngest brother. Not, you know, he's not a big owner, but he is a pretty big owner in Europe and Dubai. So those are the brothers. And Sheikh Hamdan is they're great horsemen, too. Sheikh Hamdan's really into his pedigrees, and he's just a great person and looks after everybody well around the world, and Sheikh Mohammed does also.
Why is that family so passionate about horse racing?
It is a passion, and there's no question about it. You have to be passionate about horse racing to be in it at the level they're in it. And I think they got involved and got passionate about it in the late 70s. And going to England, they lived in England in the summer and Dubai in the winter, and I think their father might introduce them to it. And Arabian horses, obviously, are in Dubai. And Sheikh Mohammed was very good rider of horses, endurance racing, and Sheikh Hamdan never was a rider, but he's very, very sharp about the business, and he loves picking the pedigrees and picking stallions for his mares, and it's really neat. He's very, very involved. Both of them are, but Sheikh Mohammed was a great rider, and some of his sons also.
In the first half of the program, you talked about moving to Dubai with your young family, with your wife Letty, and how difficult that decision really was for you. What do you remember about boarding the plane, getting ready to go to Dubai, and then finally touching down in Dubai? What were those moments like for you?
Well, it was very interesting because it was a long flight. We stopped in London and then went on. And luckily, I had my brother Neil with me and my sister-in-law Lisa Walker, who works for Judma. She was my assistant trainer at that time. Neil was just learning. He wanted to go to Dubai basically just because, and it was a good opportunity. But Lisa Walker was my assistant, and she was in charge and helping teach Art Magnus and then Neil about being an assistant. And she was there for 2 years or so, and then she ended up going back to Judmon, and she's still there. She came from Judmon. Her husband, Scott Walker, breaks the yearlings, and she lives in Lexington, and she was very important in the early days. But having her and my brother Neil wasn't married to Tristan, and having some family to go there with was important. And when I got there, it was great. We had to train at a different location. We had to train with Satish Simar, who's one of the leading trainers there now, because our yard, as they say, our barn and track wasn't ready yet. So it was about 60 days before we could move to our red stable, they called it, and Doug Watson trains there now. So it was exciting, and again, being a little nervous about being so far away from home. We didn't have the TV. It was 9 hours ahead, so TV was different and tough to get. Satellites weren't there for a year or two, so we missed a lot of our sporting events. But, you know, it all came around there in time.
Trainer Kieran McLaughlin with me on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton, looking back on what has been an extremely memorable and rewarding career for him, talking about being in Dubai. Kieran, you mentioned your brother Neil a couple of times and Trish, his wife. Do you think there's a a time coming when we might see Neil McLaughlin listed in the program as training racehorses?
It's doubtful because they have been there with me the last few years. They've been with me for – Neil's been with me from the beginning, 1993. So he's seen everything, right, you know, ups and downs of it all. But the last couple of years has been tough, and he realizes how difficult it is. And, you know, it's not just about training horses. He's a great horseman, and he would do a great job if given the right horses and the right owners. But it is difficult making, you know, you have to be so much more than a horseman these days to be successful in the horse business with, you know, I mean, to go, you have to almost go to school to learn and be a lawyer to learn about all the regulations of the labor department and the visas. The visas are very expensive, and we tried to have legal people, and that's what made it so difficult. So Neil's probably going to take a different path now. Not to say he wouldn't come back if the right opportunity was offered, but because he's a very good horseman, but it is difficult to make it.
Let's talk a little bit about what you're doing now. I mentioned a couple of times throughout the program that you are working as a jockey's agent for Luis Saez. Not your first go-round. You worked with Chris Antley in the past before going on to work with, or right after working with Dwayne Lucas before launching your own career. But what's different now about being a jocks agent than it was when you had Chris Antley?
The biggest difference is the iPad and computers and database programs that you use. Thoroughbred Manager is basically a program that Ed Tucker made that's for jocks agents. You can look up everything on his site. And then, you know, you can use buyer figures, Ragusan sheets, thoroughgraph sheets. But nowadays, luckily with Luis Saez, he's in demand. So people are calling me, reaching out to me, especially right now with so many jockeys not in Florida. We are in demand. So it's kind of handicapping and picking the right horse. Sometimes you would rather ride a loser for one trainer than a winner for somebody else. Not that you can do that very often, but, you know, you want to ride for your customers and thinking about going back to New York. So it's different. It's maybe a little bit easier because you can see everything there in black and white. You can even see their workouts and everything, but you still have to try not to upset people and pick the right horse.
Are there some lessons that you learned over the past, well, a couple of decades, being on the other side of the fence, being a trainer and having to work with jockeys and their agents from that angle that maybe help you a little bit today?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've been pretty easy on jocks agents and jockeys as a trainer because I feel like there's so many top riders and that I never got real upset having a jockey take off of a horse. But it's helped me a lot to understand it and figure it out and hopefully know what's going on now. And I don't want to get too upset about losing a mount because you'll pick up another mount. I remember years ago, Ramon Dominguez won on Imbasaur, the first race back from Dubai. And his agent at the time gave me a call on July 1st in the Suburban, his next race after winning the Pimlico Special. And then he called me 3 weeks from the race and told me, I'm sorry, but I have to go to ride for Grand Motion in California for the Oaks, the Hollywood Oaks. And I said, listen, I understand, no problem, I'll get a jockey. And I talked to Rick Nichols and who do you want to get? And it just happened to be right after the Belmont of Jazzle winning, Fernando Har. Why wouldn't you use Fernando? Rick Nichols says, well, he's just 18 years old and he's a good rider and I guess we can use him. No problem if that's who you would want to use. So that's how Fernando got on Invasor, is a jock's agent taking off of our horse after winning a big race. So you learn a lot of things and try and handle them, but mainly I try and just not get too many switches and get anybody upset.
I'm always curious, and for people that don't know what a jocks agent does, certainly Kieran is doing a great job of laying it out for you here this afternoon, but I'm always curious, Kieran, from an agent's perspective, what's more important, to make sure that your rider has a mount in every race on the program if possible, or selecting the right spots for your rider to be in, even if it's not every race?
Yeah, no, almost you prefer not to be in every race, because at this time and at his level of riding, you know, you would rather just probably ride, if there's 10 races, if you rode 8 of them every day, because it's hard work. They are very fit athletes and have to work hard, and to ride 12 races every day is very hard. Louis loves it. He's 28 years old and he wants to ride. If there's 13 races, he wants to ride all 13. But it's better to have quality and ride important horses than ride every race. You're trying to ride the best races and the best horses.
Is there a difference in your stress level now being a jocks agent as opposed to when you were training?
Well, Letty said to me the last few days, she said, you know, there's a lot of hours you're on that phone. It doesn't stop. And I said, I know, but it's great that the people are calling and I'm having to reach out to people. So the stress level's definitely not as stressful as training, because you have to deal with your help and the horses and the owners. So if I pick the wrong horse, it's not a big deal. It is. Your feelings get a little hurt if you make a mistake or you ride for someone, a loser, instead of another person that asked you to ride. But it is what it is. I mean, I put pressure on myself every day, and hopefully that's why we do a good job, is putting pressure on yourself to ride the right horse. But it's not as stressful at this time.
And you have to make sure you get to McDonald's in the mornings too, right?
Yeah, that's what's fun sometimes, is taking the help that, you know, the backbone to our operation of the hot walkers, grooms, and exercise riders, foremen, assistant trainers. And I know that from being a trainer for so long. So I went out yesterday morning and took 100 Egg McMuffins, sausage Egg McMuffins, to Todd Pletcher and George Weaver. They both train at Palm Beach Downs, and we were lucky to win a race for both of them the last few days. So I took 100 of them for all their help, and they were very appreciative. And then I took more McDonald's this morning to Stan Huff and John Kimmel. We had won for them. We won our first race as an agent for Stan Huff, who's a good friend. It was maiden 12-5, but I felt great to win for him, and it was exciting to win. So I took a McDonald's. It won't happen all the time, but I do want to take bagels or McDonald's or donuts to the help, because they do appreciate it.
Yeah, you got to be careful not to set the bar too high right off the bat either. They're going to be wanting, what, steak and eggs next, right?
Yes, exactly. Sometimes we get sandwiches delivered, you know, like a 6-foot sub sandwich and different things. We'll, pizzas, we'll talk to the help and see what they prefer going forward. But during these tough times, I'm not really even allowed on the backstretch right now. It's so funny. I had someone ask me about Louis working a horse. I said, he's not allowed to be on the backside, and I'm not allowed to be on the backside, but I still have my trainer's badge. So I drove on in and delivered the McDonald's myself, both places. But it's a weird time right now.
Yeah, well, you're lucky. You don't have to sell Louis Saez like you would a young rider that people have never heard of. I mean, he's a veteran. He's won more than 2,400 races. How do you describe Louis Saez, his riding style, and his approach to the game?
He's got a great attitude. He's a really good person. His wife and 3 daughters they have, and they've been married since they were like 18 years old. So 10 years they've been together, and he loves being at home with his wife and kids. He's very hard worker, and is, you know, he takes his job very serious. He is great at warming horses up and breaking sharply in the afternoon. He would prefer to be forwardly placed. He doesn't have to go the lead by any means, but he would like to put him in the game, and he rides them 110%. He gives you every time. He's very, very strong. If you ever saw him without his shirt on, I mean, he is very, very strong one of the strongest finishers in the game, and he has a great attitude, and he works hard, and he's just a great person.
Well, and it seems like a great fit for you now that you move into the second career. Are there still parts of training that you've already started to miss?
Well, luckily, the main thing is probably the people. You know, you forget about every day saying hello to 50 people every day, and it's nice to see you wave to them on the pony. You see a Barkley tag, you know, on the pony. You see assistants. You see trainers. So luckily, the vets, the blacksmiths. Luckily, right now, I'm not able to go out and see them all. I've been out a couple of times. I probably shouldn't have gone out. But I will, in the future, be able to see everybody. And I think that's what's great about being a jocks agent for me, is I get to see all the friends and people that I've worked with for, you know, or know for the last 30 years. And that's fun.
Kieran McLaughlin, my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Do you think, Kieran, at some point you might be able to give me a ride to the airport?
Sure, whatever it takes, I'd be happy to give you a ride to the airport.
If I recall, there's a story surrounding that particular line after you left Aqueduct one day. Tell me that story.
Yes, I drove a white Lincoln Continental, and there's Ollie's taxi service on Long Island, and a lot of them were white Lincolns, just like my car. And I won a race at Aqueduct, and I was getting some gas. And I had two times it happened to me. I was getting gas one day, and a guy asked me if I could give him a ride to the airport. Aren't you Ollie's taxi service? I said, no. And another time, they didn't want to let me in Aqueduct stable gate. And I was going back, and I had Artie in the back seat, my assistant. And they stopped me at the gate. They thought I was a taxi, and they didn't realize who I was or who Artie was, because we trained at Belmont every day, and we didn't go to Aqueduct except to race horses, and Artie was in the back seat. So it's kind of funny times, but yes, I'm willing to give you a ride there for it.
Well, I appreciate that. And I remember Rajiv Miraj telling this story about, I believe it was a yellow Lexus maybe that he was driving, and somebody had actually jumped into the backseat of his car thinking that he was a taxi waiting to give him a ride.
Yes, that's right. And I think that was in Manhattan. But, yeah, so things like that happen sometimes. When you think you're doing great and people know who you are, then you get let down, come back down, and get humbled a little bit.
That camaraderie is something that is irreplaceable. I know a lot of sports have great camaraderie, and teammates are involved with each other, and they do a lot of things off the field together, whatever it might be. But in horse racing, there are so many individual professions, like training horses, for example, like being a jockey, that you have to kind of work a little bit to bring these people together. But somehow it all comes together, and that camaraderie is second to none. Kieran, you play in poker games. You've always done that. That's a lot of fun with a lot of racetrack people. Talk about that camaraderie and that close-knit group that exists around the racetracks.
Yeah, I like to say we're a big family on the back stretch. So from coast to coast, we're a big family. And yet when we go in the starting gate, it's competitive, and we want to win or we want to beat the next guy. But we really are a close family, and in need, when people are in need, we try and reach out to help, and everybody's looking after one another. It's a different world, you know, basically the racetrack, but everybody is always there to help one another in need. And otherwise, we're trying to win races and beat up on each other in the afternoon, but that's what makes the game great.
Looks like we're down to, well, inside the final furlong here on this Trainer Talk edition, about 5 minutes left or so. I'll have a little fun with you here at the end, Kieran. Not that we haven't had fun for this hour. It's been an extremely enjoyable visit, and we'll tell people if they missed any portion, they can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast. But more devastating for you, as somebody who went to UK, grew up in Lexington, that second place finish with closing argument in the 2005 Kentucky Derby, or having your daughter tell you that she's going to go and be a Florida Gator?
No, it was being second in the Kentucky Derby for sure. I was not worried about where Erin went to school. I was happy she went to Florida. It's probably a little better academic school anyway. So I was happy she went to Florida and my son went to Vanderbilt, which is for sure a better academic school.
Any chance we're going to see some more pictures of Kieran out there that with that mustache that you were sporting there years ago?
No, you know, it's funny being here in the house these last couple of weeks. I thought about growing a beard and a mustache because you're just sitting around the house. But I wasn't happy in it, so I decided to shave and get up and go do something. I can't sit around too long.
So if you're not at the racetrack, you get a little time away with Letty or maybe even just by yourself, what other hobbies or interests does Kieran McLaughlin have?
Well, we both, Letty and I both like to watch sports on TV a lot, and I play poker a little bit here and there, but I don't go to any casinos the last 2 months for sure. So, but mainly we love each other and we hang out together, and she loves our sport, and we watch TVG all day nowadays to watching races from home. So, and obviously our children are very important to us, what they're doing, and we enjoy life.
Well, it sounds like you're enjoying it. It sounds like you've made the right decision. And hearing your story and looking back on your career, Kieran, I can't thank you enough. I've always said people like you and Todd and so many other people that are involved in this game have always been so good to me, always so accommodating whenever I'm looking for an interview. You're always willing to come on, and I can't thank you enough. And I wish you all the best in this new career with Louis.
Thank you very much. This might be one of my last interviews because jock agents don't get interviewed very often. So I'm happy to have this on tape someday to look back and think about. So thanks for everything you do for Thoroughbred Racing. It's been great with your team of people, and I enjoy talking to everybody.
Yeah, and you're going to stay on my list, too. Even though you're a jocks agent, you're on my list. I still have your number. We'll be in touch, and people will hear from Kieran again, no doubt about it. Appreciate
Thanks.
It, Kieran.
Okay, thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right, Kieran McLaughlin here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. What an hour. I might go back and listen to that again. On the podcast, I can do that. Right after this is concluded, head over to horseracingradio.net and check it out. Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts, another way to access those programs. Wow, fantastic stories. And what a career, what a class act. Nobody better than Kieran McLaughlin. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios. Until next week, be safe. This is Mike Penna, Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Thanks for listening.